Argument next in number 061601, polyethylene retail carriers against the United States. In this case, while we're getting ready, let me just a word about the time situation. I take it that the respondents are dividing their time 11-2 and 2.
That's correct.
And the petitioners taking 13 and reserving 2 minutes for rebuttal.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Why don't you wait just a second, Mr. Jones, for everybody to get settled. While we're going for logistics again, on the respondent side, we're just going to keep 15 minutes to make the clock easier. And I will try to stop you when you get towards the end of the 15 minutes and sort of save some time for your questions. Very well, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon. Stephen Jones of King & Spalding on behalf of the United States Polyethylene Retail Carrier Bag Industry, Polyethylene Retail Carrier Bag Committee, Hylex Poly, and Superbag Corporation. May it please the court. This case involves important issues in the administration of the anti-dumping law and in the administration of non-market economy, or NME cases in particular. As a result of the errors that we allege that the Department of Commerce made in this investigation, two Chinese producers, Nantong Huasheng or Nantong and Hanglong, were excluded from the anti-dumping order and are not covered by that order today. We've alleged five errors made by Commerce in the first instance and then perpetuated by the CIT, Court of International Trade, on review. Three of these errors relate to margin calculation for Nantong, and two relate to Hanglong. I'd like to start out with an issue related to Nantong, and that is the market prices, alleged market prices for polyethylene resin reported by Nantong. The crux of this issue is what the statute requires of Commerce to determine that an alleged market price is actually market-driven, and therefore acceptable to use to value the reported factors of production in an NME case. Under the circumstances of this case, the statute requires far more of Commerce than what it did. All of the respondents in this case reported market prices for polyethylene resin. Nantong, however, reported prices that were significantly lower than the other six respondents, whose prices were comparable. Nantong's prices were also lower than prices reported in commodity price indices that were publicly available for the period of investigation. Now, the nature of the product at issue is important here. Polyethylene resin is a commodity product that trades primarily on the basis of price. It's widely available in the market, a lot of market participants. The market price for polyethylene resin at any given point in time is fairly easy to determine. At any given point in time, different suppliers in the same market should have roughly the same price.
As I understand it, Commerce conducted a verification on this issue and satisfied itself that the prices were appropriate, negotiated, arm's length prices based on what each saw was the relationship between the two companies. And based on some comparison with data that was available on the internet. Correct?
Well, that's Commerce's argument. I'm glad you raised the point about verification because it's certainly a theme that runs through the government's brief with respect to this issue and other issues. Verification is a spot check where Commerce travels on site to a respondent's location and determines whether information that had been already submitted for the record is accurate, whether it ties to the respondent's books and records. In this case, Commerce claims to have verified information that the prices paid by Nantong to its supplier were arm's-length prices, but it could not possibly have verified that information because the information about the relationship was not submitted on the record prior to verification. It all came out at verification. Verification is a few-day meeting, usually 3 to 5 days. It's impossible for Commerce to investigate an issue like this at verification.
Wait, so Commerce claims to... You're not suggesting that what Commerce does during the verification is of no consequence?
No, absolutely not. Verification is very important. Again, to confirm the veracity and accuracy of information that has already been submitted on the record.
What happens if during the course of verification they come across information that hadn't already been submitted? Is relevant.
Well, if the information was responsive to a question that has already been asked, then Commerce is in a mode of determining whether that information should be accepted.
The question here, whether or not this resin was properly priced.
Well,
when Commerce goes over to China to verify, you're certainly not arguing that if Commerce were while there came upon undisputed relevant evidence as to the price, but they couldn't take it into consideration.
Well, one of the problems, Judge Clevenger, is that when Commerce discovers information verification, the domestic industry does not have an opportunity to participate in that investigation.
Well,
the domestic industry had no opportunity here.
Due process, are you? I mean, you've had plenty of opportunity to complain. In a legal sense, about the information that Commerce brought back from the trip that they said satisfied them that Nantong pricing was legit.
Right. We've had plenty of opportunity to complain, and we have.
So isn't there really the question whether what Commerce brought back, whether it was a matter of verifying pre-existing evidence or assessment of newly found information?
Well,
whether substantial evidence supports Commerce's conclusion.
Yes. The information.
Substantial evidence is such information as a reasonable mind might find to produce a yes answer or a no answer.
Right. And the information that Commerce brought back from verification here raised significant questions about the relationship between Nantong and supply. Questions which we think a thorough investigation would have led Commerce to reject those prices and find that the relationship affected the prices paid for the resin.
Well, when you say a thorough investigation, I sense from your brief that what you really are saying is that Commerce simply should have rejected this based on the disparity in prices, period. That you're not really talking about the thoroughness of the investigation, are you? I mean, you wouldn't be satisfied if they spent 2 years over there poking around and asking questions and simply said, you know what, we haven't found anything yet to see that indicate that these two companies are related.
Judge Bryson, that's correct. I mean, we think that fundamentally when you have a commodity product like this and such a significant price disparity that Commerce is required by the statute and by the case law issued by this court, Lasco Shape Group, to determine that alleged market prices are market driven. When a commodity product, the price of a commodity product is so different than what the market price is during the period of investigation, I don't think the law requires Commerce to reject it out of hand. The law requires Commerce to determine whether that price is market driven.
Well, but aren't you saying more than that? At what point do they get to stop?
Well,
you know, they said, well, we worked real hard and we didn't come up with anything.
Well,
I guess the question is, suppose they do everything that they reasonably could do to see if there's an explanation that is a kind of, aha, there's the explanation, it's perfectly sensible. This is why. It's lower quality or something like that. They just don't come up with an answer. What do we do then? Do we rule for you or do we rule for them?
Well, we think you should rule for us because because of the disparity in price, first. Secondly, if you decide that you cannot rule on that basis, you should remand to Commerce to investigate this. Because Commerce clearly did not thoroughly investigate this issue the way it would have if the information about the relationship had been reported prior to verification in response to the questionnaire as a reasonable and, we think, cooperative, careful respondent would have done.
How much of the anti-dumping material came from the supplier that you believe is suspect?
We think all of it did.
All. Okay, so what was Commerce's explanation as to why they didn't think the supplier was suspect?
Well, I'm sure you'll hear from counsel of the government, but Commerce...
It's a position you have to overcome, I believe.
That's correct.
That's why I asked you.
That's correct. The Commerce claims, Commerce argues that, first of all, they argue that there's nothing on the record that suggests that this was not an arm's length transaction. We think that's clearly wrong. We think there's evidence that they found at verification that Anton admitted, which suggests that this is not an arm's length transaction. Unfortunately, a lot of this information is confidential. It's bracketed information in the briefs. There's certainly evidence of an exclusive relationship. There's evidence of business dealings between the companies, which I can't get into the specifics of, which suggests that this was more than just a company buying resin from a resin supplier. Again, none of this came out before verification.
Is there any other explanation, like maybe that the supplier said to buy a certain amount of this stuff from us and give you a good price?
Well, there are a lot of reasons potentially why there was a sweetheart deal here.
Well, that exact point was made in the verification memo, if I recall correctly. I think the statement was the contract stipulated as long as Nantong purchases a certain quantity of material, they will receive the price that is indicated in the contract. That sounds like a requirements or that minimum volume discount type agreement. Why isn't that an adequate explanation? That's certainly one put forth by the verifiers.
Well, in this market, and one of the things that we think would have come out of an investigation in contracts for a commodity product like this, there is a price escalator clause in the contract that if the market price changes during the course of the contract, the contract price changes. One line of inquiry might have been, had Commerce had time to do this, if the information had been submitted prior to verification, is was there that kind of situation here? If not, why not? Commerce did not have an opportunity, again, in the 3 to 5 day time period, it had to verify all of the information submitted by this company to do an investigation of this issue, which was the key issue in the investigation of this company.
At what point can Commerce stop? I think that's what Joe Bryson asked. So take the reference that Joe Bryson pointed to. When the verification report this, so it looks like the contract provides for this. So that's not adequate. If you were doing a verification, you work for Commerce, and you were over there doing the verification, what's the next step you would have taken?
Well, I probably would have found them to be affiliated, but
there's no evidence that they were affiliated, as that term is used, as I understand, which would require
let me address affiliation, because it is one of the arguments that the government makes, that Commerce has to find evidence of affiliation. We think that's clearly wrong. The case law in Commerce's own cases make clear that the term market-driven means more than just affiliation between a supplier and a buyer. For example, Commerce looks at whether the price offered by the supplier or the price paid by the buyer for the product reflects a subsidy of some kind. I mean, that has nothing to do with whether there's affiliation.
Have to go to the supplier and put the supplier, you know, under oath and
attention.
Find out what the supplier
did? Well, they wouldn't put them under oath, but Commerce has, on occasion, asked companies for information, to cooperate willingly in an investigation, and they've gotten information. Again, they didn't have a chance to do that here. And we think that
this is the question is not whether they have a chance to do more, but whether or not what they did is sufficient.
Well, yes. And we think what they did is not sufficient. And one of the reasons why is because, again...
But you're having trouble telling me what sufficiency would constitute.
Well, we...
Sure, agreeing with you that the price is fixed.
Well...
Whatever's necessary to reach that conclusion.
We think, and I think we've spelled these out in our briefs, and what some of the lines of inquiry might have been that were not pursued. We think that
your answer really that the sufficiency would be something to explain the price discrepancy that you discovered, the discrepancy with all the other.
Well, an explanation that would explain the price discrepancy. Exactly. When the product at issue is this type of product, we think the burden on Commerce is higher. And when the discrepancy is such as it is here, we can't specifically say what it is, but we've included that information in briefs, how much different these prices were. We think Commerce has a higher burden there to demonstrate. And it really, you know, it's Commerce's burden when I'm standing here before this court. But it's really the respondent's burden in the first instance to demonstrate the accuracy of its information and the usability of the information. I'd like to...
Well, you're...
It's like my red light is on.
Yeah, your red light is on. We have used a lot of your time. Did you have one more point that you wanted to raise?
Well, I would like to reserve...
We'll give you a rebuttal time back.
And I would like to respond to any questions that the court has about any of the other issues we raise. I focused on this one because it's of critical importance to us.
Yeah.
But anything else that I can help the court with on any other issue, I'd be happy to address.
Well, I think this issue is the one that, at least for me, for all of us, was the issue that was most central. So thank you. We'll hear from the other side, and we'll reserve your full 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Yarovatica, you have 11 minutes. I'll let you know when your 11 minutes is expiring.
I appreciate that, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I suppose since the court has already identified that the most important issue in terms of the panel's opinion would be the issue about Nanton, I'd like to jump, I think, to the most important argument that the plaintiffs have made, and that's this notion that if they raise a particular argument, if they raise an objection to a particular finding that Commerce makes, that therefore it's because the respondents have the information necessary to assuage their concerns, that under the Fujitsu and Zenith cases, that they are somehow, they are entitled to get that more information. And I think the problem is that the questions from the court respecting when is it that Commerce is entitled to stop, when is it, at what point, that verification is satisfactory. I think the answer is that for the purposes of scrutiny in the lower court and in this court, it's at the point of substantial evidence. That's the review that this court engages in and that the lower court engages in. And I think with respect to all of these issues, substantial evidence is on the record in order to demonstrate that Commerce's determinations were proper.
Well, Mr. Jones says, and I think with some force, that the substantial evidence test isn't satisfied if a reasonable person looking at the explanation would say, in effect, oh, please, come on, that explanation doesn't wash. So his position is that the explanations, such as they were, that were given to Commerce about the price disparity, just doesn't wash to a reasonable person.
Well, in this case, with respect to the price disparity, Commerce did look at the negotiations respecting how this price was arrived at.
Right.
They talked about the website that they based their determination upon, and the court has already identified the fact that this was, to some degree, a requirements, a volume contract. they would get that price if they met certain sales requirements. So
I looked at the website information and tried to follow it, and frankly, got completely confused. It seems to me that these various printouts that appear in the appendix, page 4, 24, 25, etc., show various price levels for the resins in question, but I don't see that those prices match any of the prices actually paid.
Well, it's my understanding, Your Honor, that that's not one of the issues that's actually being disputed on appeal. I don't believe that, I agree that there's certainly, given that there's a bilingual issue with a lot of this stuff, it's difficult to discern from there how exactly the determination was made. But I don't think that there's any question that that website information was in fact, does correlate to the price that was actually paid. But with respect to the fact that there were negotiations, it isn't just a question of taking the prices at their face value. In this case, as the court's already pointed out, Commerce went in and actually looked to see whether in fact the contract had been negotiated, whether in fact there was some reason for this price being lower, and that was provided. So I think it certainly passes, as Your Honor mentioned, kind of the laugh test, this I just don't buy it. Commerce bought it because it made sense. And it makes sense based upon an examination of the record evidence. And plaintiffs can't demonstrate anything other than what they claim to be some kind of facial disparity on the record as really supporting their point.
To get back to the point that Judge Clevenger raised, which to me is really an important point, it was, I think, thrust in Mr. Jones' argument, really, is what guidance do we have from prior cases as to the proposition, how far the proposition goes that Commerce must do more by way of investigation? I mean, certainly, you would agree, I take it, that there is a burden on Commerce to do enough of an investigation to achieve a certain level of satisfaction and confidence with respect to the conclusions it reaches.
I think that the answer to that is kind of twofold.
Yeah.
On the one hand, Commerce obviously wants to find out the right answers. And so to the extent that Commerce has an obligation to satisfy itself, according to this court under, I guess, the Micron Tech case, it would be, and this would be at 117 F3rd 1396, a question of Commerce's discretion as to whether the verification procedures were appropriate and whether they were sufficient to meet the requirement to satisfy Commerce.
But how do we tell whether that discretion was abused in a particular case? I mean, what's the test that we would say, this one falls short, and here's why?
And I think that the answer to that question, Your Honor, is that the scrutiny that this court applies and that the lower court applies is substantial evidence. If substantial evidence has been met as a result of that verification procedure, then there's nothing more that this court ought to do in order to question Commerce's determination.
Substantial evidence of, I guess what I'm still stumbling over, substantial evidence of what? Substantial evidence that would satisfy a person that this is a reasonable conclusion to draw about the economic situation?
I think in this circumstance, that's certainly one way to enunciate it, absolutely. But I think that in addition to that, one can simply point to the fact that all of the cases that the plaintiffs are discussing, the Lasco case and so forth, they talk about whether it's necessary, whether the evidence demonstrated that the price was market determined. I think there's one piece of evidence that the plaintiffs actually latch onto that actually indicates that it's much more likely that they were market determined than that they weren't. And that is the fact that the supplier that was involved in this contract with Nantong now competes with Nantong for the business of a common United States customer. The notion that they would be in cahoots with one another and then compete against each other is not exactly likely. It supports further.
But wasn't that a change in their prior relationship? I thought that previously there had been a sale to this intermediary.
Well, there had been, Your Honor, but that's precisely the point, is that if these two companies were in fact affiliated as strongly as the petitioner suggests, then presumably they wouldn't be at least working against one another affirmatively as soon as their negotiated contract ran out. So I think it's one more reason to suspect that... it's one more reason to support the notion that the negotiation that led up to the contract was likely to be an arm's length as well. Applying the standard that I hope to have enunciated to the court's satisfaction to the other cases, to the other issues, let me just address them briefly.
Just stop for a second. To give Mr. Jones his fair due, I took him to be arguing that there is a correspondingly greater duty on Commerce to provide an explanation where you have essentially a commodity product where, you know, you look in the Wall Street Journal, you know what the world market price of this stuff is. And then so when you see a disparity of X, whatever that disparity was here, but I think you're conceding it was disparate, that there was a disparate price. Now, Mr. Jones is saying there's a higher duty.
Well,
does that strike you as unreasonable?
It doesn't necessarily strike me as unreasonable, but it certainly strikes me as unsupported by the case law. I'm not aware of any case that indicates that there's a heightened level of scrutiny to be applied with respect to Congress's determinations in this area. Moreover,
this may be the case.
There's no statutory basis upon which this court could rely in order to reach that conclusion.
Well, but I think, again, putting words in Mr. Jones' mouth, but I think what you would say is that this is, I mean, where the problem with the disparity is so clear and the market is so it's so easy to establish the market, it's the kind of market in which the deviations from the market price are so small. In that situation, it's almost recipe to the locator. It's just, it cries out for an explanation and a pretty convincing one. So not so much that the burden is higher, but...
Aside from the fact that if you don't want to lose this case, and no lawyer ever wants to lose a case, what would be wrong in the whole dumping law situation if we were to rule that, especially where you've got a commodity product like this, that there is a duty that requires more work than you've done here? We can't tell you exactly how much it's going to be, but you're going to have to work a little harder to come up with an explanation that satisfies a reasonable person test for the price discrepancy. Assume Congress passed that statute, right? I don't think Congress Department would fight it today.
I don't believe I'm in a position
Don't you think it would be of some salutary effect?
Perhaps it might have a salutary effect in other cases, Your Honor. But I don't believe it would have any different effect in this case. In this case, Congress did.
The way the law gets made is one party loses, usually in order, hopefully, the court wants to drive a policy, better effectuate some policy that comes up in successive cases.
Certainly, Your Honor. But I think Your Honor's hypothetical actually made the point to some degree in the sense that if Congress were to change the law, certainly Congress would be under a different obligation. But in the circumstances under the statute as they currently exist, all that Congress needs to do is demonstrate in this area as well as with the rest of them that substantial evidence has been met to support this conclusion. Just briefly, with respect to the other issues, I want to make sure to get to the cardboard insert issue because I don't believe that Hang Long is actually going to have an opportunity to address it. And with respect to that issue, there is no contradiction on the record, contrary to what the plaintiffs are saying. If one looks at Joint Appendix page 81, one can see that what the rally respondent stated was that they used low-grade recycled inserts. That is, they used untreated inserts. If one looks at page 85, where Rally submitted a response along with a bunch of other companies, that stated that some companies used untreated, some companies used treated, and those that used treated inserts that are of higher quality capable of being used for graphic purposes. So that was the hook that the plaintiffs used in order to try and say that more verification was required, but no verification would have been required because there's no suspicion that is raised, as there is no contradiction. I see I'm below 4 minutes, Your Honor.
Well, that's all right. I actually have one other question, and I won't prejudice the time of your counsel here. Were you finished on the cardboard?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the electricity.
Yes, Your Honor.
I just want to make sure I understand exactly what's in the numerator and exactly what's in the denominator. You understand what I'm talking about. It is the electrical charges were the entire electrical charge, as I understand it, electrical costs for all the production, not just the U.S. production, was all charged against the U.S. products. Is that correct?
All bag producing electricity.
Right. Not overhead, not office, but right. Bag producing. All right. Thank you.
All right, brother.
And
thank
if
you
Mr. Very Jones doesn't agree with that, it'll be fine. All right. Thank you. Ms. Ritzy Donahue?
May it please the court. A couple of points, hopefully, that will help lend clarification. Versus with regard to this idea that the data put forth by the petitioners is more compelling. First of all, the standard is market driven, and the department did investigate this issue at verification and did, in fact, verify and investigate market driven prices by an independent market research firm, Chemies, and found that there was a correlation between those market prices and the prices that were negotiated with the market economy supplier by Nantong. Secondly, we would note that in the petitioner's reply brief, they called into question this data because it was from 2001. We think this, however, shows the discrepancy in the use by petitioners of the of their price data. And that is the reason that Commerce relied on that 2001 data at verification, is because that is when the bargain was struck, that is when the prices were negotiated that were relevant for the period of investigation. And in fact, the prices that petitioners want to offer are for a time period that were about a year or so following when the prices were negotiated under the contract. Also, petitioners raised this idea that there were things that they couldn't bring up because of the BPI, claiming that there was this notion of affiliation. And we think that there was no indication and no substantial evidence on the record of affiliation, that, or even that they were a significant customer, which is how petitioners characterize it. In fact, the sales to this, the market economy supplier, were a very small percentage of Nantong's overall 2002 sales. Finally, we would like to note with regard to the factors of production, petitioners also try to rely on differences between the factors of production reported by Nantong and the respondents. We would note that we think this is largely irrelevant for the reasons that we briefed, and the fact that the department verified all of the reported information found to be accurate and credible. But moreover, we would note that the chart offered by petitioners in their brief is inaccurate. It is entitled Production of T-shirt Bags, and in fact, the only it's only Nantong that is the production of T-shirt bags for those factors of production. In fact, the other factors of production for the other respondents correspond to six different types of bags and not just T-shirt bags, and therefore it's apples to oranges. So we would further like to address the production were slips with regard to the factors of production that they put a lot of weight on, and just note that there is there's substantial evidence in the record why these production order slips were in fact an inaccurate representation of actual consumption of inputs.
Thank you. And just one, what in the world is a T-shirt bag? I wonder about that all the way through the question.
Literally a bag that contains T-shirts?
I thought it might be, and I wondered about the cardboard inserts too, so I was wondering whether it was the kind of bag that would go around a set of three T-shirts with a cardboard piece that held the T-shirts in place.
That's essentially
is that it?
My understanding.
All right, thank you. Very well, thank you. That was great.
Let me clarify one thing. Harry from Hall. A T-shirt bag is not a bag for T-shirts. A T-shirt bag is like if you go to the typical your shopping mall, your, when you get your groceries, and they're very thin and have their own handles in it.
Oh.
Okay. So, for instance, one of the reasons why we have this situation with Hung Long, you should understand this.
Why do they call it a T-shirt bag?
Well, they call it a T-shirt bag because it looks like an old man's T-shirt. And that's why in the trade they will say a T-shirt bag. Now, why is this kind of important? It is kind of important in one sense, because my client, Han Long, doesn't make them. Their target was the T-shirt manufacturers, because they produce a lot. We produce very high-end shopping bags. And we argued that they were separate line products. We didn't win on that in the commission, But this is one reason what's going on here. Your question and the question answered from Commerce was correct. What happened at verification was simple. They basically, Commerce could verify the total consumption of all electricity, but it couldn't verify the allocation to the U.S. bags. So Commerce said in its decision, okay, we're going to use what is not really adverse facts, I would call it partial facts available. We're going to take the verified information we have, which is total electricity for all bags, whether it's to Europe or Hong Kong or whatever, and we're going to drop that on the U.S. sales. And basically,
do we know what percentage of bags in the facility during this consumption period were going to the United States?
We've got a pretty, if you look at the numbers confidential in our brief, you'll see that there's a big difference. Like, there's a huge number of bags going to other markets. And we also broke out by specific canoes the difference in the factor for electricity. This was adverse. It was adverse. No doubt about it. And I think the issue is basically coming down to, does the Commerce Department have the discretion to do what it's doing? And the issue is there substantial evidence on the record to support their decision? And was it reasonable? And I think it was. The only other question, point I just make in closing is cardboard. It's not just a Hung Long issue. This issue cuts across all the respondents, and Commerce had to make the decision.
The cardboard, the little piece that goes in the bottom of the plastic bag?
Yeah, it would go like in a shopping bag. It would go in the sides of the sometimes of the shopping bag and in the bottom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Makes a solid bottom.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, you have a couple of minutes left. Actually, we're giving you a couple of minutes. I will give you another, maybe, let's give Mr. Jones 3 minutes because we'll give him some.
Thank you, Your Honor. Going back to your colloquy with Vieira Loedeker, there is statutory support for a heightened level of scrutiny. The statute requires Commerce to use, quote, best information available, value the factors of production. And what is the best information to value the market price of polyethylene resin, given the record in this investigation? I was concerned by what Mr. Yarowatic was saying in response to, I believe it was Judge Clevenger's question. He responded, quote, Commerce needs to satisfy itself. And I would submit that that is incorrect. What Commerce needs to do is make a reasonable inquiry and a reasonable determination. And in order to satisfy the substantial evidence test, in order to satisfy, in order to be entitled to Chevron deference, what Commerce's determination must be reasonable. And what Commerce itself is satisfied is certainly important from their perspective. But for purposes of this
future market for polyethylene resin?
Is there a future
market? Yeah, future market. Future market. In hand?
I honestly don't know.
One in Shanghai?
There are published price indices, and I don't know how often they are revised.
You can look at the Journal of Commerce and find out what raw material costs are.
There are certainly subscription services that provide that data to all of the players in the market.
You're not arguing that there's any silver bullet here, some easily ascertainable best information better than what Commerce has.
Well, what you have on the record is best information are the prices reported by all the other respondents, which all cluster around 5 or 6% of the mean price, and which are consistent with the published price indices published by ISIS Lore, which is a respected consultancy that publishes these prices. So you certainly have clear evidence of what the market price was during the period investigation. I'd like to address what Mr. Yarowatiker said about the cardboard insert issue. And maybe I misunderstood, but I think what he said was that Rally reported that it used untreated, others reported that they used treated, but then in the final determination. I mean, what our argument is if Rally used untreated cardboard, Commerce did not use the Indian tariff classification for untreated cardboard. They erred. They used the tariff classification for treated cardboard. We think that they erred in applying that for all of the respondents because there was no evidence to support that any of these respondents used higher quality treated cardboard. No evidence whatsoever, an unsupported assertion that changed an earlier response to the questionnaire. And finally, on the electricity issue for Honda.
Sorry, let me make sure I understand. You're saying that rattle used, rattle used untreated. Commerce says, well, others used treated. But you say there's no evidence to support that conclusion by
the only evidence,
therefore no evidence that these respondents.
Well, what we have on one side is just common sense. Why would you need to use treated cardboard for the insert of a plastic bag?
But if they did. I mean, maybe it wasn't a good idea, but if they did. I mean, Commerce is saying the others used treated. You're saying that that's simply they made it up?
Well, what we're saying is that there isn't evidence to support that assertion. Commerce did not obtain evidence that supported that determination. And what you have on one hand is the common sense notion that you don't need treated cardboard to use as an insert in a plastic bag, and then an unsupported assertion, yeah, but we use treated inserts. So we think that determination to accept that they use treated inserts is unsupported by substantial evidence because you have countervailing evidence on the other side. I believe my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank all the counsel. Let me ask one question because this case presents a problem that we run into in a lot of cases, particularly these kinds of cases with regard to the large amount of material marked confidential. Is there any chance that we can obtain a waiver from the parties of objection to reference to some or all of the confidential material in any opinion that we might write? Because otherwise, obviously, it becomes difficult to try to navigate our way around these large chunks of confidential bracketed materials. Is there anyone who has is in a position to say that they are the party in interest with respect to the confidential materials and are prepared to waive any objection or to limit the extent to which we would be precluded from referring to confidential materials in any opinion? Mr. Barry?
For how long? Feel free to, what I would say is generally describe. If you don't use a specific number, that would be
okay. So are we really talking about numbers? I mean, in other words, and perhaps there's one party that is identified as the party to whom, from whom I think the resin was obtained. That I noticed that was blocked everywhere. Is that something that?
Yeah, Your Honor, I don't know if you find this feasible, but what I've encountered in the past in the Court of International Trade, what's been done is the judge has sent the opinion as it's written, without bracketing and said, or with the bracketing noted and said, we'd like to just not bracket this. Is there any problem with that? And we signed off on that.
Not really something that sort of fits with we'd have to make a huge change in our modus operandi. But let me see if numbers are really what is the concern, plus perhaps the identification of that party. Is there anything else that comes to mind that we should steer clear of?
The information belongs entirely to the respondents.
All right.
I can't think of anything else.
All right. That's very helpful. Thank you.